Chariot Solutions TechCast, Episode 53, Part 1 of our interview with Hans Dochter and Adam Murdoch of the Gradle Project. Gradle is an application assembly and build management platform that provides for convention-based build processes like Maven, but also implements a dynamic, Groovy-based scripting and plugin system to make it very easy to customize your builds and perform specific steps at any point along the way. My guests today are Hans Dochter, who's the creator of Gradle, and Adam Murdoch, who's a committer on the project and the CTO of Gradle Inc., a company founded by Hans and Adam to support development teams working with Gradle in the field. In our talk, Hans and Adam also detailed some features coming out in Gradle 0.9, which can be downloaded as a series of daily snapshot builds. A quick and timely Philadelphia area announcement. After our podcast on Neo4j a little while ago, we found out that Peter Neubauer, creator of the Neo4j Graph database, will actually be traveling to our area next week. We grabbed him for his Philly tour leg, and he's going to be speaking in a quickly organized spring user group meeting on Tuesday, March 9th at Chariot Solutions in Fort Washington, just outside of Philadelphia. His topics will probably include an overview and working demo of Neo4j, as well as building and developing graph-based databases in Java with Maven. Should be a very interesting talk. For more information, go to phillyspring.ning.com. On to the show. Well, gentlemen, welcome to the Chariot TechCast. My name is Ken Rimple, and I'm here with Gordon Dickens as my co-host.
Hello.
And we're here talking today with Hans Dochter and Adam Murdoch from the Gradle Project. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Fine, thank you.
All right. So why don't we start with just a brief background of each of you, and I hope I do this right, but Gradle is a build tool that kind of combines what I think are the best of Groovy and Ant and Maven all together in one nice little package. So why don't we start with Hans, get an overview of your background and what you've done and how you started Gradle.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the invitation to that podcast. Yeah, my name is Hans. I'm the founder of Gradle and the CEO of Gradle Inc. Before that, I worked as an enterprise Java consultant and developer in many projects. I worked also for Skills Matter, the training company in London, teaching patterns and test-driven development, stuff like that. So, I started Gradle when I 2.5 years ago when I quit the last project I was working for, where I was also the build master. And I remember saying to one of my colleagues at one point, "Hey guys, when I'm grown up, I will write my own build system," as a joke. And then this joke became a reality much earlier than I thought, because just after that project, I decided to give it a try. So that was in the summer 2007. So because of the pain I felt with the existing build tools, and the interesting thing was from day one of the announcement, there's Gradle 0.1. The mailing list was more or less busy. People got involved. It was from the very beginning. We got a lot of feedback, and a couple of months later, I got a patch from some guy called Adam Murdoch, and I thought, good, nice, I have a patch, but I had no time to look into it for a couple of weeks, and then I had a look at the patch, and it was not just kind of adding new functionality. It was a kind of really smart redesign of some complex aspect of the Gradle core. And I just said, "Oh wow, those are the patches I'm looking for." So I immediately sent an email to Adam if he wants to join this project as a committer. And fortunately, he said yes. And yeah, from that day on, Adam is the major committed to Gradle, but there are also many other contributions we get, so that's a part of the Gradle story.
So Adam, how did you learn about Gradle?
I got looking around for a replacement for a creaky build, a giant enterprise build sitting on top of Ant that was creaking and groaning and getting too hard to maintain, and I just did a review of lots of build tools, and Gradle was the best fit for what we needed. so we started using it. That was back in the 0.3 release day, so there wasn't much to it at that point, but it offered lots of good stuff already as far as flexibility and so on. So we started using it, and you know, there were things missing at that point, so I started sending patches in and became a committer and so on.
So why don't we tell everyone here what Gradle is?
So Gradle is based on a rich build language, which is extensible, and this build language consists of declarative as well as imperative elements. So it's not a build framework like Maven, right? On the other hand, it's not just an imperative scripting tool like Ant. So to give you an example, so what we mean with declarative is that Gradle offers many ways where you just can say, here's the what of my project, right? And Gradle figures out the how. So for example, you have some Maven-like project, you simply tell Gradle, hey, this is a Java project, right? And kind of standard Java project. And then, but you have some additional requirement like, okay, additional directory with integration tests, which are part of my project. So you just tell Gradle, hey, there is a source set, that's how we call it, with integration tests, just the what. And then Gradle automatically adds all the stuff that is necessary for deal with this directory. So you just say, there's a source directory, and Gradle will add all the necessary tasks to deal with that source directory, like, you know, for compiling it, and et cetera, et cetera. And you just need to say, hey, this source directory depends in its compile class path on the production sources or on the unit test sources, and Gradle automatically will wire the different compile tasks together in the right order. So one important part, we offer a declarative build system without paying the price of rigidity. I think that's a very, for us, a major way where we distinguish ourselves from other approaches to declarativeness.
Okay, so like in a Maven build cycle, and if you want to customize the Maven build lifecycle, you have to go and write a Mojo plugin or something like that.
So often you kind of need to do workarounds, or sometimes just you have to accept the view of the world as Maven imposed it to you. And we think, especially in the enterprise, you have to be humble as a build system. That's our approach. There are so many requirements and scenarios you as a build system also have no idea of. So it's very hard to come up with a project view like this is how a Java project looks like, you know, for all enterprises. And you might have a couple of screws to adapt it, but basically there is a very privileged layout and structure and behavior that is imposed. And we think it's fair enough to offer such a view, but it should be not a privileged view. You know, you should have all possibilities to add to this view or to tell a completely different story, right? Without falling into the alternative of being simply an imperative scripting tool, right? So, and that's our idea of an extensible build language offering the appropriate domain element to tell the story of your build.
Another important part of how we achieve that flexibility is the imperative elements that Hans touched on, which are basically tasks. They're the atomic pieces of work that a build does. So we offer you the ability to declare these tasks in your build script alongside the declarative elements, so you can add these one-off pieces of work that your build needs to do. But it's also how the declarative elements are implemented. So all of our declarative stuff sits on top of these tasks, and you can change them or add to them in the same way you can add your ad hoc stuff
So if you want to put, and I'm not sure if I'm getting this correctly, but if you want to put together a build that, you know, by convention, everything lives in source main Java or source main resources, kind of like in Maven, but then maybe at the end of it, maybe you're doing Google Web Toolkit integration and you have to run the GWT compiler, you can just build a Groovy closure to call it, right?
That's exactly right, yes. So the first is a good example of the declarative piece where you basically say, for all my projects, you can find, for all the projects in this build, you can find the sources in, you know, source Java or wherever they happen to be. And what we offer is also sitting between the sort of declarative stuff saying this is a Java project and the imperative stuff saying here's a task to run the GWT compiler. There's a rules layer which also offers you some really powerful ways of customizing your build, but doing it in a way that can work across a whole bunch of projects at once. So you can say for all my projects, the source directories here, or for all my projects which are GWT projects, add a GWT compile task to run the compiler. So that offers you a lot of power as well.
But the important thing is, coming back to the GWT example, so if this is an enterprise scenario, you could easily hide the imperative stuff in your using the Gradle imperative elements in your company Gradle plugin, and the implementers of a concrete build script would use some declarative elements, custom declarative elements provided by your company plugin. So our goal is that especially in enterprise scenario that the actual builds are mostly declarative, right? And the enterprise plugins, they provide those custom declarative elements and the implementation, of course. So that's the kind of scenario we are envisioning. So we think declarativeness is extremely important, and we're pushing it to a new level as we allow to introduce custom declarative element as first level citizens. From a built-in point of view, we offer a couple of declarative elements like dependencies and source set, etc. So a little bit like Maven, but then you can add your own, and they're as privileged as the Gradle ones. And that's very important for us to have a powerful, maintainable, and concise build, which is mostly declarative.
That's great. This is Gordon. I wanted to ask about you touched on the topic of plugins. Can you give us some information on plugins and how are they something that a typical developer would create on a project, or is that something that we would download and use from Gradle?
A bit of both, actually. Plugins and build scripts are very, very similar. They share the same APIs, so they the things you can do in a plugin, you can also do in a build script, and vice versa. There's two flavors of plugins. One is a compiled Java class that implements a particular interface, but the other form, which is probably more interesting, and is plugins can just be implemented using a build script. So basically, you can use that mechanism to chop up a big build script into a bunch of pieces that you can compose. So it's good for separating the declarative stuff and the imperative stuff. But you can take that build script and pop it up on an enterprise server somewhere, and that's your way of sharing not just configuration, but also extensions to Gradle, custom tasks, and so on. You could take those build script fragments and check them into GitHub and share them with the world. So it's a really low threshold for sharing and reusing bits of build logic.
Yeah, that's very powerful. So to make it clearer, so you share source code, right? You put some source code, somewhere some Gradle source code, and you just in your build script you just say, oh, I want to apply that, this source code, and you specify the URL that might be on your local machine, but it might be somewhere in the internet, and then Gradle automatically gets that Groovy script source code and compiles it and applies it to your build. So the sharing threshold is so low, and therefore it is so easy and people use it. So that's an exciting feature of 09. We haven't had that in 08. So yes.
Oh, okay, so that's coming.
Many people use already some 09 snapshot. So it's there, but it's not in an official release yet, but it's out. For example, Grails is using that, or a couple of our enterprise users, they're using 09 snapshots.
Some of these plugins are built in, right? I mean, you've got, for example, like the Java plugin and the WAR plugin. So if you had to say, you know, your bang for your buck, give developers an idea of what they can get right out of the box by using Gradle in the least lines of code possible, what are some of the plugins that are the most powerful?
So I think the Java plugin would be the central one, which basically with a line of code saying, basically this is a Java project, you know, apply the Java plugin, you get a standard lifecycle for compiling and testing and packaging up a Java based project. So there's a test task and test compilation and jarring up and all that sort of stuff. And then building on that is there's a Groovy plugin, Scala plugin, Clojure plugin, which add compilation features for those different languages. Then building on top of that stuff, there's a WAR plugin for building web apps, Jetty plugin for deploying to a local Jetty server. So that gives you basically out of the box with a very small number of lines of code, the ability to build and deploy a web app in any of four different languages, or all four, if you like. There's some OSGI stuff.
Some code quality.
Code quality, yes, for doing check style, code narc, and that set will grow to include coverage and so on soon.
In terms of dependency management, obviously one of the pain points in using a Maven project is managing dependencies. How does Gradle help with that in a typical build environment, I guess?
Well, there are different approaches people have towards dependency management. So and some people like certain approaches and some people dislike them. Some people like remote repositories. Some people want to have all their stuff in their version control, right? So again, we don't want to impose anything. So we support all of those approaches. So if your JARs and your meta information lives in some remote repository, and the meta information is in some POM XML, we support that. So we fully support the transitive dependency mechanism you know from Maven. We also support if the metadata is in an IV XML, right? But which is basically the same principle. It's you have a remote repository with metadata. But if you want to have all your dependencies in the lib directory, which lives in version control, we support that as well. It's also first class citizen, this strategy. And on top of that, and people who using Ivy know that we also provide the idea of custom scopes. So Maven, you have a fixed set of scopes, right? Compile, test, etc. But there's no way to add scopes, right? And in Gradle, you can easily add as many scopes as you like and say, oh, this is my custom scope, and it should have all the dependencies from the compiled scope plus the additional ones that I assign to this custom scope for whatever reason. For example, for executing my integration test, if my integration test need specific additional external libraries. So one important issue regarding dependency management is build reproducibility, right? And there is a problem with that if you store your transitive metadata in a remote repository, right? And it's not version controlled. It's not people can change the metadata of a certain version. There's nothing that prevents people from doing so. So, and this is an area where we're also developing strategies to have full transitive dependency management, but you express even the transitive dependencies you express with the Gradle DSL and not with some metadata living in a remote repository. That's one strategy to deal with the issue of reproducible builds and remote repositories for external dependencies.
Is that something you're working on for Gradle 0.9, or is that in there already?
No, there is something in there already that supports that, but we want to extend this. We call it client modules. But as I said, we support all the classical ways of dealing with that, but we think there is still room for innovation. So especially regarding the topic of reproducible builds, and there are people that, who say we don't want, you know, everything. Every metadata, so not just the first level dependencies, also the transitive dependencies, we think that belongs into the project. It should be part of version control, and this additional strategy as a choice we already supporting. But there are issues if you go for that approach. There are issues if you want to share this the artifacts of that project within another Maven repository. So it's not so easy to generate a POM XML for that approach, right? So and that's something we want to improve in the future.
Yeah, and just to kind of backtrack a little bit, so we touched on the Gradle lifecycle, and we talked about the scope specifically. So what are the major phases of the lifecycle?
So the first, so there's a few that are fixed. To sort of bootstrap the whole process, and beyond that you can pretty much add or remove as you choose. But the first thing Gradle does is to build up the tree of projects that are going to be involved in the build. And then it configures those projects, and basically that means it just runs their build script. So the build scripts are actually a build configuration script rather than a build script itself. And the result of that, of running those or executing those build scripts, is a fully built model of the build and all the projects. And through all the declarative elements and through the rules being applied, also a graph of tasks that describe basically everything that needs to be done for the build. So that's the configuration phase. And then Gradle, based on what you want to achieve, so in the command line you might ask to assemble all the artifacts or run the tests or whatever, Gradle then traverses the graph of tasks to determine which tasks need to actually execute in which order, and then it goes about executing them. But most of that is not really that visible to the user. The life cycle that you actually see is really what is one added by the tasks or the so in the case of the Java plugin, we add a clean task and a classes task and a test task and a assemble task and a build task and so on. They represent the kind of high level stages of the build, but they're just tasks. So you can add new ones and change the dependencies between them if that doesn't work for you. And at each of these lifecycle points, we offer you hook points to get involved and react to what Gradle is about to do or what Gradle has just done. So, for example, during the configuration phase, they're listeners. So you can add a listener which Gradle will call to say, look, I've configured all the projects. You might want to add some additional configuration or record something. Do some profiling, say. Same with after it's decided which tasks to execute. It says, okay, I've figured out what tasks I'm going to execute. You might want to do some something about that. And the example we always use is that, say, the release task is is going to be executed, you might change the version and take the snapshot bit out of the version of the project. Or if this is a CI build, we might switch on coverage checking. Or if this is a developer build, we might disable some tests or what have you. So there's lots of hook points. It's a pretty simple lifecycle, and most of what you see as a user of Gradle is defined by you, so you can pretty much do what you like there.
So you're saying you can dynamically change the build process at execution time?
You can't, but you can do that as Gradle is building the set of tasks or the graph that it's going to execute. We calculate the full set of tasks to be executed up front, so that you have that information available so that you can react to that. But once that execution starts, we don't change what's going to be executed.
Actually, I misspoke there. I meant to say at build time, but...
At build time, definitely. So during the configuration phase, you can dynamically do whatever you like. For example, adding tasks dynamically, so you might have integration tests that you need to run against a bunch of different app servers or a bunch of different database backends, say. You can dynamically add an integration test suite for each of those. You might have a task, for example, coverage. You might want to dynamically switch coverage on and off based on some property or what type of build you're running. You can dynamically say, oh, this is a CI build, so I don't need coverage, so nothing depends on coverage. Or this is a CI build and I need coverage, so I need to add the coverage task.
So basically, to have full access of this directed acyclic graph, before this graph is actually executed, it's very powerful. It basically allows to look into the future, right? You can ask at the beginning of the build, for example, you could hook in some logic, hey, Gradle, after this graph is set up, right, please check if the release task or the upload task is to be executed. And if so, check, for example, if the username and the password for the repository server is set. If not, throw an exception, right? Otherwise, you would have to wait until the upload task starts executing and then tell the user, oh, you've forgotten to assign your username or your password, right? On the other hand, you want to allow users to build other stuff which is not related to uploading, even if they don't have set this username password. So you can look into the future, before anything is executed, you can say, oh, is this task to be executed? Do some additional checks. Or if this task is to be executed, do some additional configuration, etc. So that's part of what we call a deep API. So you could also, you can hook in so many ways. So for example, you can hook in before any task gets executed. You have some memory leak, you can tell Gradle, okay, before each task gets executed, print me the free available memory. And then you can see, compile, memory is still good. Test, there's the leak, memory is bad, stuff like that. Or you can say after a task is executed, right, you can hook in some stuff and you, for example, could deal with exceptions. So if a task throws a particular exception, your listener gets informed, you get the exception, you can check, is this the Jetty task? And is there a certain exception or some server task? Do a proper shutdown of the resources or whatever, you know? So that's one of our vision. We want to provide a deep API. You can hook into every aspect of what Gradle is doing and can customize behavior or can get information. That's something we think is very important.
Thanks again to Hounds Doctor and Adam Murdoch for coming on the show and discussing Gradle with us. We'll have part two of the interview coming up next week. You can find out more about the project by navigating to gradle.org. Also check our show notes. This is TechCast episode 53. You can find all of our episodes on techcast.chariotsolutions.com. If you're looking around for a low-cost tech conference to attend this year, why not come to the Philadelphia Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference on April 8th and 9th? Use the promotional code TECHCAST, all one word, and save $25 on this low-cost conference. Speakers include people like Uncle Bob Martin, Michael Cote, Yehuda Katz, Jeremy Grelli, Dan Allen, Ed Burns, Scott Davis, Venkat Subramanian, and more. We have events such as a rematch of the Web Framework Shootout and both a technical and business-level mobile panel. Meetups for Agile Philly, a new Philly Groovy Grails user group being launched at the show, which includes Scott Davis and Venkat Subramanian, and even an evening recording of the TechCast. Come on out. It's at phillyemergingtech.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.